T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
A little bouncer slowly toward Bryant. He will glove it and throw to Rizzo. It's in time! And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series! The Cubs come pouring out of the dugout, jumping up and down like a bunch of delirious 10-year-olds. The Cubs have done it! The longest drought in the history of American sports is over. And the celebration begins.
Never gets old, Matt Spiegel.
It does not. November 2nd, 2016. Today being the 3rd. Yesterday being the 2nd. And as we bring in our friend Pat Hughes from the broadcast team, I'll say to you, Bruce Levine, and to Pat, I think November 2nd should be a holiday in Chicago. And not Cubsmas or Cubsmuka or anything like that, because we want to avoid religious partisanship. How about Cubsgiving, as we are in the spirit of gratitude? November 2nd as Cubsgiving every year. Pat,
welcome,
what do you
Pat.
Think?
It doesn't get old to hear it on your end, I'm sure, either.
Bruce and Matt, great to be with you guys. I don't think I ever will get tired of hearing about that, hearing that play. I still, you know, it's really against all logic. I still get kind of nervous when I watch or listen to the final minutes of that game, because I know how it turned out, obviously. But the tension was so palpable and so intense at that moment. It's literally an unforgettable moment and feeling and experience for me, and I'm sure it will be for the rest of my life.
I think you're right. You know, I'm still expecting Bryant to throw that ball into the stands at some point. I don't know why, but I guess it's so many years of being a Chicago person, seeing so many disappointments with Chicago teams over the years that you hold on to that moment, just like the White Sox fans and their front office and people that root for the White Sox do for 2005, and you know the end to that game that Canerco catches that, you know, gets that the ground ball and he's out at first. It's the same thing. So yeah, that's a prize, Pat. Pat Hughes, our guest on Inside the Clubhouse, and Pat, when you're talking about the 2 years, what other things went through your mind as you were broadcasting that last hour?
Well, you think about how much that game meant to so many people, and I mean millions of people across the globe, people who have been Cub fans their whole lives, 70, 80, 90-year-old people who had never experienced a Cubs World Series championship. Finally, it happened. And then you started thinking about the people who never did get to experience that. People just in the broadcast business, like Harry Carey and Jack Brickhouse and Arnie Harris, the director on WGN-TV for all those years, among others, Lou Boudreau, Vince Lloyd, Jack Quinlan. You start thinking about all the people who never got to experience it. And then, of course, my partner Ron Santo and Ernie Banks, you know how much it would have meant to both of those guys to have been there. And I almost feel emotional right now just talking about that. But it was far beyond Cleveland. It was far beyond the United States. It was really all over the world, Cub fans who were just pulling for the team to win that final game. And I just knew how much it meant to them. And it was kind of almost an overwhelming feeling, really, when you think about all the people and all the heartbreaks over the years and how much it meant to them. So those were the thoughts in my mind. It was not the easiest game for me to broadcast, let me put it that way.
You have a piece of baseball history that you are able to offer people out there. Tell us about what you have as far as your scorecard from that game.
Well, I did save the scorecard, and Mitch Rosen, our great boss at the Score, he requested a copy of it shortly after the World Series, about a month later, And he said, I'd like to, you know, run off maybe 100 copies and send it out to our sponsors and to some of the people who work at the Score. And I said, well, great, Mitch, that's fine. You know, be my guest. And people seemed to like it, and they said, gee, I'd like to get another copy of that. And then you, Bruce, yourself, you were gracious enough. About a year ago, there was an event in the northern suburban area. You've been doing that event for years and years.
Max and Benny's, you mean? Yeah, I remember
yes,
that.
And you said, why don't you bring some of those scorecards along? And so I did, and people snapped them right up, and they seemed to really like them. And then finally, after about a year and a half after the World Series, it dawned on me that, hey, this might be something that people would really like. And we put it on the website, and sure enough, people have loved it, and I've loved giving it out to people. And there's a charitable tie-in as well with the Make-A-Wish Foundation, so it's all good. And the scorecards are available at baseballvoices.com, the Game 7 scorecard. But it will be a reminder for you of one of the great moments in the history of Chicago sports.
And you have them signed and framed as well, right?
I do. I'll sign them any way you like, you know, to you or whomever, a family member, Uncle Charlie, Aunt Betty, whoever you want. We're happy to do that.
Aunt Betty's not a real fan. She doesn't deserve it, Pat.
Well, yeah. Then forget Aunt Betty. But
I've got one on my wall at home because they handed a couple out here at the radio station, but it's not signed. So I got to invite you over and maybe sign that, Pat.
Well, that's fine. Make me an offer, as I always say. But no, we're the frame versions too are going to be out. We're going to release those, I think, Monday or Tuesday of this next week, and those are really sharp. My brother-in-law is a woodworking genius, and it comes in a professionally custom-made solid cherry wood frame. They really look sharp, and you know, people like it when I put, say, example, two Bruce or two Matt. The Chicago Cubs win the World Series, and then I sign my name. And I love doing it. I really do, because I know it's going to be a memory that people will cherish forever.
Without a doubt. Pat Hughes with us here on The Score. Pat, I had the absurd good fortune to be standing behind you in the broadcast booth at that moment, because I was in the auxiliary press box way down the right field line, but wanted to come for a better view there at the end. And yesterday I shared the video for the first time that I ever had. Happens to be a minute and 8 seconds long. So it happens to be 108, the length of the video. But to your point about that not being an easy game to broadcast, there you are at that moment, the one that we just heard, while I'm running around shooting video. Mark Grody is a pro, but shooting video at the same time. Mitch Rosen's a pro, but he's shooting video at the same time. I don't think Ron Coomer was, but other than that, you're the only guy who's actually working while we're all trying to take the moment in and commemorate it forever.
I love the fact that it's 108, Matt. That's a nice little tie-in. 108 years and a minute and 8 seconds. Very nicely done there. But, you know, it's funny. I was so much into the moment and concentrating on doing the very best that I possibly could. I actually asked Ron Coomer about 2 months ago because somebody brought it up, and they said, what was that like? And I said, Ron, did I stand up at that last moment? Were you and I both standing?
Nope.
During the final out of the World Series? He said, nope, you were sitting. So so that I was really oblivious to almost everything else around me. I did not know that you and Mark and Mitch were all shooting video because I had some other things on my mind at that moment, obviously.
Yeah, the first broadcast of a Chicago Cubs World Championship was yours and Ron's to have. How fitting and great after your long career in broadcasting as well as with the Cubs now for going on 22 years now, Pat?
Nope, next year is going to be number 24.
24,
can you believe that?
Boy, I'm losing time.
Yeah.
By the way, what's with the new bobblehead? I saw that in the Phil Rosenthal story yesterday. There's a bobblehead of you and a whole story in there.
Well, it's a fun thing, and I'm very pleased to say that the initial order of the blue shirts that I'm wearing on the bobblehead, those were sold out. They sold out in one day, They made 2016 of them, and people are ordering those. You can still order at bobbleheadhall.com. Not bobblehead doll. This is as in Bobblehead Hall of Fame. So go to bobbleheadhall.com, and you can pre-order. And I'm wearing a red shirt there. And the cool thing is, we've been talking about the Game 7 of the World Series, it has an audio clip built into the bobblehead doll where you punch a little button and you hear the final call. You know, the Chicago
awesome.
Cubs win the World Series.
Great.
So that also will be a nice little memento.
Well, Pat, it's going to be an awfully interesting year upcoming. The Brewers are obviously for real. The Cardinals are coming, too. The Pittsburgh Pirates were a bit of a surprise. Cubs have their hands full, don't they?
They do, and that's the way it should be. I think you could make a case, Matt, really, that this is top to bottom, the number one division in all of baseball. Even the Reds, for a while there in June and July, they were the best team in the division for about a month and a half. The Pirates, with their young pitching, they're going to be good. You know the Cardinals are going to be good. They always seem to be competitive. And Milwaukee, my goodness, what a year they had. They came out of nowhere to stun the Cubs at the very end and win the division. So, yes, it'll be a very interesting winter to see what all of these teams and their front offices do to replenish and fortify their ball clubs. But it should be very, very competitive and very interesting. I'm excited about it.
BaseballVoices.com. Get your Christmas and holiday gifts. Nothing more perfect than the Cubs win the World Series signature of Pat Hughes, of his scorecard from the first championship ever broadcast of the Chicago Cubs on the radio. Pat, have a great holiday season. I'm sure we'll be talking to you soon. Thanks for joining Matt and I on Inside the Clubhouse today.
Bruce, it's always a pleasure. I hope you and Matt have a great rest of the show and happy holidays, okay?
Same.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you, Pat.
See you guys.
See you later. That's Pat Hughes. Once again, baseballvoices.com if you want to get that scorecard.
Absolutely. And he has all those other CDs of great broadcasters. It's a collection that Pat has done of Hall of Fame broadcasters. You can have your pick out, enjoy it, because it's for the true baseball fan who loves baseball on the radio, it is perfect. Rick Hahn, the general manager of the Chicago White Sox, next on Inside the Clubhouse.
It's Inside the Clubhouse right here on 670 The Score. I am Matt Spiegel. He is Bruce Levine.
I usually am. I play him on the radio most of the time.
Yeah.
Sometimes not as well as others, but certainly we talk baseball here every single Saturday, 52 weeks out of the year, from 9 until 11 a.m. Chicago baseball, all things baseball here is what this show is all about. And Matt has joined me for the last 8 weeks, my permanent co-host, which is great, as his passion, like mine, is the sport of baseball. Mm-hmm. And the hot stove season,
oh, it's good
for
stuff.
Some people, is their favorite time to listen and talk.
Well, I saw a couple rumors that the Indians are going to have to do some things, like maybe trading Corey Kluber. Boy, would that be an ugly thing for Indians fans to have to swallow the potential trades of either Corey Kluber or Carlos Carrasco from their rotation just to create some financial flexibility. Market constraints
I'll give you what the market constraint is. An average of 15,000 people showing up a night.
Whether they're good or not, and they have been great.
Sometimes it ticks up toward 20,000, but it's the smallest of small markets with a fan base it's a city that has really never recovered from the crash of 2008. And jobs are still not plentiful there, and therefore it is a tough market for Chris Antanasio, the general manager, vice president and general manager of that team, to figure out when he's trying to figure out his payroll, stay competitive in the division, win another division, try to win another World Series, and yet keep it to the point where their payroll, it doesn't skyrocket.
I mean, they've got two legit annual MVP candidates in Francisco Lindor and Jose Martinez. And then they have a tremendous assortment of very good starting pitchers. But to have to lose a couple of those, and I don't think they'll be able to be in their own free agent market for their guys, and maybe they don't want to be anyway, but Cody Allen and Andrew Miller, the relievers that they have used slash abused to great extents over the past 3 years or so. So, boy, that division could be coming back to the pack if the Indians have to deal off some stuff. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, and we're supposed to talk to Rick Hahn of the White Sox in just a minute or two here. Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, are they going to get the length of deals similar to what Giancarlo Stanton got? I've seen that rumored as well, that Giancarlo Stanton got 13 years from the Marlins. And I have seen, I believe it was 12 years, sorry, 12 years. And I have seen both 13 and 14 year rumors for Harper and Machado. Can you believe that?
Yeah, I mean, the amount of money is, it's the highest AAV of any player for Giancarlo Stanton. And, the agents are going to want 13-year deals. I don't know
if there's two teams that would be able to let
the ever-changing world of free agency, as we saw it last year, certainly tells us that that might not be in the cards. We are fortunate to be joined by the vice president, executive vice president, rather, and general manager of the Chicago White Sox, Rick Hahn, on Inside the Clubhouse. Good morning, Rick.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, appreciate it. So let's start out by looking at your Chicago White Sox and knowing you're going to the general manager's meetings here in just a day and a half or so, and that the free agents and their representatives are going to be around en masse. How do the White Sox look at free agency this year, and what would your approach be that you can share with us?
You know, I think our approach to the offseason is similar to what it's been over the last couple as we began this rebuild in earnest about 2 years ago at these GM meetings. We're still focused on putting ourselves in the best position for the long term, to put ourselves in a position to go on multiple runs for multiple championships. But the good news is that's starting to get a little bit closer now. Obviously, we've been through two difficult years at the big league level with regards to the rebuild. But as you look at our projected rosters for, let's say, Birmingham at AA and above come opening day 19, you're starting to see a bit of a critical mass of position players and arms that are of the potential to make that kind of impact and to have that long-term success. So ideally, we continue to add pieces that are on that similar time horizon and then solidifies that future core. That said, we obviously have some short-term needs that need to be addressed until that group is ready. As we talked about at the end of the season, there certainly are needs on the pitching staff, in the rotation and in the bullpen. And if there's the opportunity to make an upgrade that lasts for the long term, we'll absolutely move on it. If there's only the opportunities to improve the short term until this group of prospects is ready to coalesce at the big league level and make a big impact, then we'll do things in free agency or via trade that improve us in the short term, but obviously don't complicate things for us in the long term, which is still taking priority for us.
You and Kenny and Jerry haven't done this before, and you've seen other people do it. But when will you know it's time to go out and get a quote-unquote signature guy? A guy, maybe in free agency, maybe via trade, that you want to build around, that has leadership quality, that can be the face of an organization going forward?
You know, we've spent a lot of time over the last 18 years looking to add premium guys when the situation has been right. And over the course of time, we've been able to do that. I think when you're talking about this specific juncture in terms of where we are in the rebuild, we can't control when premium guys become available. But if we see them as potential fits for the long term, we're not afraid to move on that and try to convert. Now, obviously, individual free agents, you can never guarantee you're going to be able to sign player X. The bidding for especially premium guys is robust, and the individual players have certain priorities to them and to their families that may or may not align with being a White Sox. That said, we know that, again, you can't control when certain guys become available, and even if it may be "quote unquote" a year too soon, we aren't going to shy away from potentially trying to convert on a player like that if we see them as a potential long-term fit and boost to what we're trying to do here.
All right, I heard it. So Manny Machado's coming. Good. Glad we glad we sorted that out. Thanks, Rick. Rick, wanted to ask you about Yoan Moncada. I thought when Paul Konerko was in with Hawk Harrelson, he was brilliant, as he always is, talking about hitting, right? Talking about how Moncada's patience was a negative in terms of you have to establish the reputation that you can hit before you get the calls. And I wondered if you guys have discussed that, if you agree with that, and what the plan might be for Moncada this offseason.
You know, I didn't hear Paulie's comments on that, so I can't really speak exactly to that. But I will say, starting with what Moncada has from a plate discipline standpoint is a big positive.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, I understand the notion that he got punched out on borderline pitches too much, and as a young player, you aren't going to tend to get those calls. I also agree with, the general sentiment that being more aggressive on pitches to hit early in the count is going to serve him well. But I think if you look at this player holistically, you look at the fact that he's 23 years old, he's been playing professionally now in the States for a little over 3 years, but he still presents with this uncanny eye and this ability to do damage on pitches that he, you know, is ready to square up. That's a good starter set. I'd much rather have him need to be prodded to be a little bit more aggressive, to maybe do damage on his pitch a little earlier in the count, as opposed to having someone who can do some damage but has no concept of the strike zone or what he should or should not swing at. So, yes, there's absolutely the need for improvement. There's absolutely the need to do more damage on pitches that earlier in the count. But at the same time, this is a real good position to have a 23-year-old in when it comes to what his overall offensive profile is likely to be for the long term. He has the things that are much, much harder to teach than you know, the discipline element that maybe needs to be adjusted a little bit to get him to do damage earlier in the count.
In Todd Steverson, you have a great communicator, a guy that works extremely hard at his job as hitting coach, a guy that's always out there with his players, working early. From the perspective of what you expect and your organization expects from a hitting coach, how do you define success for an instructor? And I say that because a lot of people now are year to year, and with launch angle and with different approaches being out there so much, they're changing their hitting instructors so often. What do you expect? What's the philosophy that he espouses and that you guys cling to?
You know, it's funny because it is very difficult across the board to evaluate a manager and coaching staff when you're in the process of a rebuild, because obviously the big league performance, the metrics, what you're normally judging guys by in terms of wins and losses and therefore success in professional sports, tend not to be there because the roster is going through a transition. So, and you add on top of that hitting coaches, which is one of the most difficult jobs in all of baseball, and one that you do see a great amount of turnover, because just based upon how difficult it is to hit at the big leagues and you're handling 12, 13 guys at a time, invariably there's going to be guys going through slumps, and there's going to be guys who, in theory, you would think, hey, maybe they need to hear a different voice. But when we're evaluating our coaches and we're going through this process here, as we stated back when this rebuild started, we wanted to have guys in place who had a history with teaching, guys who had a history of establishing organizational priorities, articulating them to players, making sure that message is getting through to the player, and holding them accountable for either meeting or not meeting our expectations and complying with that philosophy. So when we're looking at, to answer your question, when we're evaluating the effectiveness of our coaches, it's really more along those lines. Are they establishing the right priorities? Are they holding players accountable? Are they able to get through to the player to have them execute the plan that we want them to execute? And a lot of that stuff is tough to see during a rebuild when you're just looking at sort of the results of individual right. players at the big league level. Again, if we felt there was a disconnect in one of those, if they didn't have the right priorities or they weren't able to communicate to the player, it wasn't getting through, or they were letting players off, if they weren't complying with what we wanted to do, that's when you'd see us making a change.
I wanted to ask you about two young pitchers who are obviously very important long-term. The Michael Kopech experience was absolutely electric at your ballpark. And then, of course, so sad. How's he doing with the timeline, and what are your expectations for when he'll be back to help?
You know, everything's going according to plan, and you're absolutely right that that was one heck of a gut punch that we all received there late in the season when Michael went down. If there's any silver lining to it, I suppose it is the timing, and that is that he continues to be on a pace that he will be without restriction by the start of the 2020 season. So it not trying to, you know, sugarcoat or avoid the fact that we're going to lose the 2019 season and the development time that comes with it, which stinks. But at the same time, if this was going to happen, now I guess would be the ideal time given how he factors in for the long term. And we fully expect come 2020 he'll be back out there competing and helping us win and still has an extremely, extremely bright future with us.
And then the other guy that I wanted to ask about is Dylan Cease, who was just so brilliant and climbed up everybody's rankings, finished the year at AA. How aggressive do you want to be with him, knowing the volatility of arms as you just experienced? You don't know when they might blow, if they're going to at all, and he's already had Tommy John once.
He has, and knock on wood, he's doing great. And really the only thing that is probably holding Dylan back in the 2019 season from contributing at the big league level is that innings base. And from a developmental standpoint, in terms of strictly looking at his foundation of innings pitched and what you can reasonably expect going forward, he's kind of at the same spot that Kopech was a year ago at this time. When we acquired both players, obviously basically a year apart, let's say, or a season apart, their career high in innings due to injury or other issues was in the 70s or 80s. Then that first full season with us, Dylan last year in 18 and Michael in 17, they each got to the 120, 130 range in terms of innings pitched. Obviously, Michael last year, although he struggled early in the season, once he was ready to get to the big leagues, we brought him up and hoped that he was going to be able to build up into the, you know, 160-ish or so range to continue to have increased that season-to-season innings pitch floor. So we sit here with Dylan right now. He's, as I said, sort of where Michael was a year ago, coming off of 125-ish for his career high in innings. So we just have to be cognizant of how we use him in 2019. We're not going to, as tempting as it might be, you're not going to be looking for him to put up 180-plus innings next year until we see how the season starts playing out. So his future is extremely bright, and again, if for whatever reason he was building off a much higher base, you could say, boy, this guy's going to have a real impact for the bulk, if not the entirety of the 2019 season. And in Chicago, I mean.
Executive Vice President, I'm sorry, Rick, finish your thought.
No, that said, the future with him, again, health permitting, is extremely bright, and you're going to start seeing things from him in the not-too-distant future, I believe.
Executive Vice President and General Manager Rick Hahn joining us for a few more minutes. Very gracious with his time today. Headed off to the GM meetings next week that start in Carlsbad on Tuesday and go through Thursday morning. Rick, your feelings, thoughts, emotions when you watched Chris Sale in the playoffs and then closing out the World Series by going back to the future and where he started out as a Chicago White Sox in the bullpen, closing out the final World Series games. Your thoughts?
You know, it obviously on the individual basis, I'm happy for Chris. Still consider Chris a friend. Spoke with him when they were last in town. Saw his dad at the All-Star game, and they're still a friendship there and a relationship where you're happy for the individual. I'd be lying if I didn't say there's an element of it being a little bittersweet that obviously we envisioned for a long time him doing that in our uniform. And when you see it happen elsewhere, you're happy for the guy, but at the same time you feel that element of missing out. Obviously, when you make a trade throughout the game, you hope for these win-win situations. Given where we were in our success cycle and Boston was in theirs, we certainly aligned where they could get potentially a short-term win with Chris, as we've now seen them do. And our portion was going to be a longer-term win with the players like Moncada and Kopech and Bisabi that we received in that trade. So they got theirs. Now it's on us in the coming years to get ours and make that a true win-win trade and worthwhile for both of us.
Well, there's your signature guy for 2020, a free agent, Chris Sale.
You're breaking up.
Go ahead, Matt.
Well, Well, it's a little before that. I mean,
you can't talk about a player who's under contract control elsewhere anyways.
How about a guy who's not under control? You need a free agent pitcher for right now, very potentially. Is James Shields somebody you'd consider bringing back, even though he's now a free agent because of his mentoring capabilities and his ability to eat innings these days?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there, Matt. I mean, I can't tell you how many different articles I read this year where – unbeknownst to me, you'd see this mentioned by a minor league pitcher, Cease, who you guys brought up. Mm-hmm. I think Dane Dunning had one earlier, where out of nowhere they're talking about the impact that James Shields had on them, whether it's with, you know, a pitch grip or pitch usage or how they're approaching the game. And that is an element of what we are looking for if we do wind up with some, you know, shorter-term deals and more veteran-type guys that we bring in. Part of that is the impact they can have on the future and the mentoring element of that. And James certainly filled that role real well over the last couple of seasons. So we're certainly not closing the door to that. And we'll just have to see how the coming weeks and months unfold here.
Rick, we appreciate your time as always. Look forward to seeing you in Carlsbad. I know the White Sox are always under the radar. Nobody should underestimate what you might be doing there.
Sounds like a good plan. I like it, Bruce.
Thanks, Rick. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
Got it. It's Rick Hahn, the general manager of the Chicago White Sox. Yeah, David Price brought up James Shields when asked about his changeup just in this World Series. It was like, when did the changeup get good for you, said James Shields down in Tampa
right.
Bay.
So. And underrated the ability he showed one of the top innings eaters, as you mentioned, Matt, and also pitched seven innings or more eight times. I think there was only three other guys that did that all year.
Yeah, I understand it can be a frustrating moment when you're thinking about just adding guys who can help you sort of keep a place, you know, just like get through a year as you wait for better things. But such is the reality of a rebuild.
I prefer Chris Sale.
In one more year.
and Rick, you know, honestly, I put him in a position where he couldn't really talk about it because when you start talking about anything about another player as an executive, you're tampering.
Right, but that uncomfortable laugh told us something, too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what would be greater for White Sox fans to see free agent Chris Sale be added to a already electric young pitching staff to finally put the pedal on the metal and go forward toward competing for a championship?
Got a few minutes to take your phone calls if you want to hop in at 312-644-6767. You can text us at 670-11. Steve Rosenblum coming up at the top of the hour when I will stick around, but more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and me, Matt Spiegel, on The Score. The bottom of the hour on The Score was brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Coach Collins and Northwestern Basketball return to the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season. Don't miss your chance to catch the Wildcats. Season tickets on sale at nusports.com. Man, I'm hungry. I want some Kreplach.
Okay. We'll have Max and Benny's send you a bowl. They always, they always take care of our holiday party here for Mitch.
I know.
But it's never not time to go to Max and Benny's.
I might not be here for the holiday party. Is it on a Saturday?
We'll have to ship you some lox and bagels.
That's right.
You a Nova fan?
Yeah. Just FedEx me some Kreplach. That's a sentence that's never been said before. So we just talked to Rick Hahn of the White Sox, and some guys want to call and talk about it. This is Mike downtown on Inside the Clubhouse. What do you say, Mike? How are you? Oh.
Well, good morning. I'm just about to sign a check for my renewal of my season tickets, and it's hard to sign it. I think Rick Hahn is a good man and is a bright man, but I am just so tired of his press release type comments. We're looking at, and Bruce, you tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm looking at the roster again. I had my renewal form on my desk. This looks like a Triple-A team again. And at some point, the White Sox have to get serious. You can only treat your fans badly, you know, so many years in a row. But last year was a Triple-A team, the year before it, and this year, if you look at every position, you're going, I'm getting excited about Daniel Palka coming back. I'm going to spend X thousands of dollars because I have to believe in Rick Hahn. It's very frustrating. I don't know if the Sox get that.
Well, Eloy's coming, okay.
Yeah,
and the key to watching the White Sox, I think, Daryl and Matt, is watch the starting pitchers and if they evolve quickly here. And if, as Matt asked Rick about Dylan Cease and how quickly he can get here, because once you establish a starting rotation and if these guys click, the other things can come around. I agree with you. Position player-wise, they are far away. But Eloy should add to that mix, and you're going to look for growth, obviously, from Moncada and Anderson. And the rest is still a work in progress. And I agree with you on the idea that should you spend your residual dollars or not, but you don't want to kick yourself a year from now in 2020, giving up those seats that you've had for a long time when the team possibly gets good.
Well, Mike, I would quibble with the phrase, treat your fans badly, because they're asking you to understand what they're doing. And they're asking you to understand that they are not prioritizing winning on the major league level. And while he's said it very clearly, and you don't have to accept it, and perhaps you don't want to, but they're trying to give you cheaper tickets when they can. They're trying to give you better concessions, better ballpark experience, yada yada, all those kind of things. While they're asking for your patience as they spend on different things, do you understand what they're doing? It's a matter of whether you want to accept it or not.
No, Matt, I disagree with you entirely. I think Sox fans are saying, if you ask us now to wait for Eloy, well, we waited for Moncada. That didn't work out so well. The fundamental issue, I appreciate Rick Hahn, what he does, the product on the field, it really, should Major League Baseball fans be forced to pay for that type of baseball product? Is it fair to the fans to ask them to watch those players and pay major league prices? It really is a question of whether or not rebuilds are appropriate when you are asking people to pay. This isn't Charlotte. This isn't Birmingham.
No, it isn't. But look at the teams that have just won the World Series. The Astros went through a rebuild. The Cubs went through a rebuild. The Royals went through a rebuild.
Not everyone's guaranteed to win.
Without a doubt.
Okay.
Without a doubt.
But Mike, I'm with you. You're not forced to go, but you have invested probably a lot of years in the White Sox, and you feel you have the right.
I would argue that they treated their fans much more poorly in the 4 years before they committed to this, when they stunk anyway. They stunk anyway, and they were trying to win, but being very, very bad about it. They were very poor at it, and their team was bad, and they had no shot and no direction. Well, they were mired in mediocrity.
You know, I'm with them on their rebuild, but there's no guarantees that everyone is going to be the Astros and the Cubs.
Well,
there just isn't.
That's for sure, but they clearly had no success
Mike,
doing it the
so
other way.
Thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it.
They had no success doing
it
the other
look,
way.
If, you know, the idea that Mike is a season ticket holder, okay, uh-huh. and he has been for a long time, you can't lose track of that investment and not seeing anything coming back.
Well, I respect it, but don't make the investment then. You don't have to make the investment.
I know, but you're talking about a guy that is not involved like he is. He's put his time, he's put his years in. Mm-hmm. He expects more back.
I have compassion for him, but it's not about him. And that's a hard part to accept when you're a season ticket holder and you feel the connection. This whole process, the entire rebuild, is not about his dollars this year and his time this year. They're willing to sacrifice it.
You're right. They are willing to sacrifice it, but he doesn't want to give it up, and he's torn.
I understand him being torn.
Right.
I understand him being torn. And clearly, not everybody is going to buy in. And you have, certainly, you're right to not spend the dollars. And I understand the skepticism, too, in terms of they haven't done well trying to win straight up. So now, you trust them to try and do the rebuild? I understand all the skepticism.
I hear from a lot of Cub fans who gave up their seats in 14, 15, mm-hmm. you know, back then. Most of them regret it. But at the time, it was a poor investment.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of White Sox fans who are different than that caller in terms of understanding what is happening and willing to watch it and live through it, suffer through it for at least one more year.
Again, if you've had tickets for 10 or 12 years and you have your location, you give it up, you're not going to get it back when they're good.
Yeah, well, it's life is full of difficult choices.
If you can send them a few bucks to help them out, Matt, I think, you know,
you're asking the wrong guy. Daryl in South Holland on 670 The Score. Hello, Daryl. You're on.
Hey, good morning. That was a great conversation you guys just had, man. I really appreciated that.
You got it.
Thank you. My question is, you know, I listen to Rick Hahn also, and briefly you touched on Dane Dunning, and I was just wondering, Are any of those young guys earmarked to be like a closer? Do we have any closers in the organization? Because with the way pitching is going, you know, guys are pitching 5-6 innings, getting into the bullpen. You know, who's going to be our quote-unquote closer? Are we just going to spend the money and go get one when it's time?
Well, I was on the page, Matt, and thank you for your call, Daryl.
Mm-hmm.
I was on the page all along that I thought Michael Kopech was going to be the closer. And he proved to me and a lot of people that he could be more than that. But when you have 101, 102, 103,
mm-hmm.
is that going to be more valuable to you as a 4 or 5 year closer than it is a starting guy in your bullpen if you have that excess of other viable pitchers going in, and which they're building on right now?
As you're developing guys, they're almost always going to be given a chance to prove they can right. be a starter because that's where the most value is.
But how long does 101, 102 last for a starting pitcher?
I don't know. We spent some time talking about Nate Eovaldi, who after two Tommy Johns here at what, age 28, was throwing 100, 101 for 6 innings in relief.
Wait a
and
minute.
Still has it going.
What about those two and a half, three years that he missed?
Yeah, he absolutely okay. missed those years. But
that's my point.
Well, but you don't know until a guy gets there. You don't know whether the arm is that golden amazing thing that's going to last
yeah,
or not until
again,
you actually ask him to do it.
103 in the bullpen. I mean, is there a more viable guy out there that could be the closer of the decade for the Chicago White Sox?
Let me ask you a question. If a guy's throwing 101 now and you've got another year and a half before you are actually contending or 2 years before you're contending, are you sure he's going to be throwing 101 then?
Well, he won't be back for a year.
Right. But I mean,
he's
going to
miss the whole season, so you're not going to see him until 2020.
I think the way the closer—
advance yourself a year and a half from now. That's when you'll see Michael Kopech.
Right. But the way that the bullpen and the closer situation has evolved in baseball, sometimes it's going to be a starter that you use in that role for a little while. And also, the arms are so volatile year to year, you don't know who you're going to use from year to year.
Makeup and everything else just scream at me, you know, top closer in the game, Michael Kopech.
Well, it's interesting. They've got other options down there we didn't even discuss, like Alec Hansen, who had a down year in the system, but they believe a lot in him. Lots of folks to discuss and lots of weeks to do it. This has been a fun Inside the Clubhouse, Bruce.
Jacob, Tom, all you callers, thank you. Sorry we didn't get to you. People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine. You can follow me on the website. I write Cubs and Sox on 670thescore.com. I'll be at the GM meetings Monday through Thursday, reporting back on all the shows, and I'll see you next week.
Looking forward to next week when we'll get your take on everything that you observe down there at the GM meetings. Steve Rosenblum is next with a partner that sounds an awful lot like me. Inside the Clubhouse back next week. Have a great day, everybody.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.